Next, we have Mari Gassiarowitz, who is an epidemiologist at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services AIDS and HIV program, where she has worked since 1994, except for a two-year tour in Tanzania. Her greatest work-related passion is working with community members to use health data for decision-making.
Thank you. This talk sort of, I'm not sure it fits in here, but I'm here and you're here, so we're going to do it. There's been a lot here on health equity stuff, so that's great. I'm going to sort of a little bit fit in with that. The co-authors, you know, they sort of said, ooh, you don't really need to put me on here. They're not actually co-authors so much on this talk as on the whole concept of, you know, this is the former minority health officer, the director of Healthiest Wisconsin 2020, and the person who heads all of that. And so I feel like we're, and there are a lot of people I'll acknowledge at the end, but this is a big piece. So in that sense, I guess it fits in here. So what we're talking about is addressing disparities beyond race, ethnicity, to include, among others, low SES, LGBT or sexual minority populations, rural and urban, people with disabilities. So talking about minority health programs can play a role in that. And I know for some places, this is like, yeah, duh. For others, you know, maybe this is, for us, it's, I guess it's work we're doing. So in that sense, I have nothing to disclose. So the main points here, I just sort of said this, that state and local minority health programs have historically focused a lot on racial ethnic minority populations or people of color. And the case here is that these programs are strengthened by broadening their scope to address additional populations that experience health disparities. So we'll talk about Healthiest Wisconsin 2020, our Wisconsin Minority Health Program, community partnerships, a data report we're working on, and then what's next. So Healthiest Wisconsin 2020 is our version of the Healthy People 2020. It's in state statute to prepare a plan for the decade and also to track the data. That's where that data report will come in. And it was a huge planning process in 2009 and 2010, engaging more than 1,500 people. So this, the way the Healthiest Wisconsin 2020 is organized is that there are these two overarching areas, health disparities and essentially SES, and I'm just put a little mental red circle around health disparities because we'll come back to that. Then there are these various infrastructure areas and then health focus areas. So, you know, this is familiar, I'm sure, to people. And I'll just acknowledge the importance of social determinants of health, and I know there are a zillion models out there, the WHO model, this is one of them, but basically the punchline of this one is, you know, we all know in these rooms that, you know, health isn't just about, you know, or mortality and morbidity aren't just about health behaviors, there's a whole lot more to that, so this audience is familiar with that. So, in thinking about health disparities, I'll come back to more of this, but basically talking about race, ethnicity, SES, as in educational and economic status, sexual orientation and gender identity, people with disabilities, and geography. And the way this sort of came to be was that the disparities, back a couple of slides here, there were, in the 2020 planning process, there were groups to address each one of these focus areas. So, you know, this 1,500 people, there's a lot of people, a lot of work. And this health disparities one, which was comprised both of people from the health department and external partners, and really led in the sort of charismatic leadership by some leaders of community-based organizations in Wisconsin, basically said, you know, we need to go beyond race, ethnicity. And I think the SES piece was sort of looking at, gee, race, ethnicity, and SES are so closely tied together. The LGBT piece was really more looking at a minority stress model. Like everybody, or at least I think there's some common understanding that people of color experience health disparities, and there's a piece of that that's sort of growing up with minority stress. Like you may have seen the data on African-American women with a college education. Their babies have worse health outcomes than white women with a high school education. At least that's true in Milwaukee. So You know, so there's this sort of women of color growing up with this stress piece, and that may impact, despite the education, may impact on birth outcomes. So that sort of minority stress understanding was what added the sexual orientation and gender identity piece. Then once it came back, so that was external, really, to the health department. Once it came back into the health department to say, what do we do with this, there was the addition of people with disabilities, I think, understanding also the minority stress issue. And Dr. Khan gave a talk, I guess it was only yesterday, it seems like a long time ago, that I really recommend, kind of laying out the minority stress and in people with disabilities issues. I don't know if any of you heard it, but very good talk. And then the geography, sort of, you know, the geography is a little different. That's just kind of partly acknowledging the resources. You know, if we think about really rural, distance from various health resources, really urban for us, Milwaukee, that confounds with the SES and you know, racial communities of color. So anyway, this is sort of how this constellation came to be, not to say that there are other populations we might not want to add, but here's where we are now. So the Minority Health Program is sort of the institutional home for 2020. So there's this big planning process, but then whose job is it to move this thing forward? And that is the group. We had an internal disparities task force, different from that external group, really grappling with sort of these issues and how do we move things forward. And as I talked to this group kind of in preparation for this talk, they really wanted me to make sure that I conveyed that this stuff is hard. I mean, maybe it's not a surprise to anybody in this room, but for instance, we had a survey where we asked, it was not really we, but there was a survey that asked various programs about their data collection on a whole number of populations. So almost half the populations, the program said, oh, yes, we address gender identity. But maybe a couple percent said, yes, we address sexual orientation. Okay, so we realized they're thinking gender identity, male, female. No, we think gender identity, transgender. So there's some education and, you know, definitions and so on. So there's a lot of work to do. And actually what I've learned at this conference is folks in Alameda County and Riverside, is that right, in Southern California, are doing some really cool work that I will be taking back and will benefit from that. So then community partnerships, of which there are many, and I'm just going to mention two. One is the Minority Health Leadership Council, that second one actually, and that's a group that's been meeting for a long time around the state, kind of advising the state health department on a variety of issues. And while they identify themselves primarily as addressing communities of color, when we talked about this notion of expanding, and especially a report that I'll tell you about in a minute, they were so excited. Like, yes, it is right for us to be looking beyond communities of color and looking at, you know, these other populations. So that was great that we got that endorsement externally. They actually wanted to fire off a letter to our division administrator, but we had to say, ooh, she's just come to town. I don't know if you ever read in the news about our Republican governor, Governor Walker. So we've had some issues to deal with, and we sort of said, ooh, slow down. We do want your support, but we need to do it strategically. So then the Minority Health Leadership Program grantees also are maybe probably further ahead than we are, and just here are some of the grantees that are, you know, kind of doing the work. This organization's actually working with LGBT youth of color, so they've kind of moved beyond where we are. So let me talk a little bit about a data report that we're working on, and that serves both as a baseline report for Healthiest Wisconsin 2020, and because it's in statute, we need to do that, you know, report at the decade at least, and then a minority health report that's supposed to be twice a decade, and we're, again, a little bit behind on that. So in the past, that minority health report has been organized, well, okay, let's say the last time it was organized by racial ethnic group, the time before it was by health focus area. And we said, well, this time let's organize it by health focus area, based on the fact that we've just finished this 2020 planning process, but we will address various populations, and then in the end we're saying, okay, and we'll also add chapters by the various populations. So we're looking at all of the health focus areas, a couple of infrastructure areas where we can get some data, and then these overarching on the left, they're really embedded throughout, so there won't be chapters so much there. So again, back to this list of populations. So the idea is that each chapter would address, where possible, if we're looking at mental health, look at data by race, ethnicity, by SES, sexual orientation, gender identity is really hard in terms of data, disabilities, and geography. So I'll tell you a little bit about that. So first of all, so we'll talk a little bit about features of the report. The first is that the report is in PowerPoint slides that are annotated, kind of you can see here. And we'll put that out both as a slide set and as a big, huge PDF report. So if somebody wants to look at it like a report, they can. But the idea is that somebody can pull this slide set off and use it with community partners. And we really, you know, really feel strongly that people be able to use the data. There'll be links to other reports. Part of that is there's just a ton of information out there, and we need to keep that people be able to use the data. A set, a template for analysis. So we've provided to each of the health focus areas a template saying, you know, okay, so provide some data by trend, and then provide information and asking the health area epidemiologists to provide data for morbidity or mortality. And then we wanted, you know, but as you know, it's hard to get data for LGBT populations, people with disabilities, sometimes SES. And so we've engaged some population health fellows from UW-Madison to conduct analysis in YRBS, Youth Risk Behavior Survey, and the Behavior Risk Factor Survey for youth and adults, respectively. And there, because we have questions, we've gotten questions over time that address sex of sex partner and sexual orientation, we're able to do some of that analysis. And I'll show you a couple of slides. So, and then we have a student who's doing a lot of the legwork, and then a review is, you know, a multi-level review process, including going through the department. So here's just an example of some data. This is the sort of suicide ideation cascade, looking at suicide risk among high school students by race, ethnicity over a 5-year period. And so the numbers in red are statistically significant differences with a 95% confidence interval. So you can see, let's say in that second one, in the last year, have you made a plan, you know, related to suicide? And so you can see that for Black and American Indian students, those numbers are, you know, 15 to 22% are really much higher than for white and Asian students at 10%. And you can see that throughout this sort of cascade, especially American Indian. So now we'll look, and you can look at the scale again. This goes, the highest number here is 25. So if we look at students who have had same-sex contact, comparing those to students with only opposite-sex contact, you can see these numbers are much higher. They're all statistically significant compared to, you know, again, the lighter bars are students with only opposite-sex contact. So again, here, here. And then we'll put them together, just pulling Black, American Indian, and then students with same-sex contact. And you can see that the same-sex, I mean, those are big bars. Not to say that the disparities that Black and American Indian students are facing aren't important. They are. I also want to acknowledge, and something I haven't heard as much here as I would like, there's a lot of overlap in groups. You know, we always think of, like, there's this group and this group and this group. But you may have heard read a piece in the news recently, a survey of adults showing that more adults of people of color identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and that's certainly true in the youth data as well. And if anybody's interested, I can show you some of that. So anyway, I just want to acknowledge the overlap. But just these are big numbers. And so, you know, what we want to be able to do with, I'm just going to come back, here is by, well, actually here in a sense, by organizing the report this way. If, let's just say, if we organize it by racial ethnic group, and somebody's working in tobacco, and everybody working in tobacco knows that there's this big health disparity with American Indians. And so somebody might say, okay, let me open the chapter, let me look at those data. But somebody working in tobacco may not know about this disparity. I showed you mental health, but, you know, in terms of smoking rates in LGBT, but we don't have the data, youth, But if it's all in that chapter and they see disparities for LGBT youth, for people with disabilities, everybody knows SES, and sort of embrace that as, wow, I work in tobacco, this is my job to, you know, to address all of these populations, then hopefully that's really driving how they're doing programming, how the funding goes out. So it's really about kind of helping people understand the data and move things along. So that is kind of the point there. So with the Minority Health Program, what's next? We're actually in the process of, or they, not really me, but hiring a new Minority Health Officer. And with that, I think, is the opportunity to do some program identity change that I know we're a bit behind. Like the federal, it's the Office of Minority Health and Health Equity, and we're not there yet, and that may sort of be a challenge, but talk about that. We have a community of practice working on sort of outlining directions, some cultural competence training. We need to do more, as some of our colleagues out here are doing. We have some meetings in the programs, and part of that is just sharing the data, because not everybody's seen this stuff, and like, wow, okay, this is something I need to learn about. Opportunities for collaboration, and we I've been doing a lot of work in LGBT health, and as we meet more with people working in disabilities, realizing how much we can benefit from one another's work. I mean, they've got these really cool posters about deafology on the in the elevators and stuff, and you read that, like, wow, we can benefit from this. And at the same time, we've done good work in terms of sort of pushing forward the data collection, and they're saying, oh, you know, how can we learn some of that. So there's a lot of opportunity for synergy around some of these issues, and all of it to better serve populations. So in summary, minority health is bigger than race, ethnicity. There's synergy between minority health programs and Healthiest Wisconsin 2020, and a lot of opportunity for collaboration, both within our department and with our partners, you know, both around data and serving people and doing good work. Oh, yeah, and I'm not naming people by names. I do want to just acknowledge, you know, the work of a lot of different people and entities. I think that's it. Yes, it is.